Peg, does that mean you're ready?
That means I'm ready.
All right. Well, let's get rolling. So October 13th, 2022. Good evening, everyone. This is Planning Commission. Commissioners present, Matt Cochran, Tina Carlson, Elena Hughes, Colleen Thompson, John Varanth, and alternate Shelley Price Gibson. Town or PC Clerk Margaret Smith and Land Planner Lee Nellis. Everyone present. Did I get everyone?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll start with number one, which is approving the agenda. I'll make a motion to approve the agenda tonight.
Matt, one correction. I am going to suggest we strike approving of the minutes.
All right. So I'll make a motion to pass the agenda, striking the minutes.
Right, and I'd also would like to make a really brief remark right before Lee starts his discussion on the procedures.
Okay.
Not a separate agenda, but I do want to make a brief remark there. And I seem to have a dead microphone here.
We'll turn it on, probably.
It's on.
Okay, does someone want to second that agenda, please?
Can you give us 1 second, Matt? We're having a technical difficulty.
Yeah, thanks.
None of those are going. Okay, you can do this one and we'll share. There you go.
Okay, so all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
John, aye.
Peter Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Thank you. Okay, John, over to you.
Okay, briefly here. First, I really want to thank Lee for his ongoing efforts. These memos are always very helpful. With regard to the one for tonight, I think Lee's kind of already knows this. We're already following most of the points suggested in the memo, and I do strongly suggest we consider his recommendations as we proceed with processing the subdivision applications that are in progress.
So, John, let me just interrupt. Sorry. So, basically, we're moving into the developmental discussion with Lee, and you just wanted to add some stuff in the beginning. I just want to frame this in the right place here.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so for the public and Planning Commission, we're on the agenda right now to discuss with Lee Nellis the developmental review discussions, some subdivision stuff, and so on. So thanks.
So for the record, I just want, this will set a little better context for the discussion that we're going to have. I had a very good walk and talk with Rachel Levinson, and she is still thinking about things and really doesn't want to say a lot. But basically, she wants to do something good for the land and the community, and is willing to consider proposing an alternative subdivision concept if we as the Planning Commission show a willingness to be a little more flexible and recommend ordinance changes that would make a better concept possible. So I hope that Lee will take that as a lead into what he was going to discuss tonight as far as how to, reviewing of subdivisions and so forth. So that just sets a little context.
Okay, and I'm going to further the context a little bit. As the Planning Commission has read, I think Lee sent the developmental review in August. I can't even remember the dates. You gave us some great background on ways, perspectives to view subdivisions through the idea of where the building envelopes are, roads attached, and so on. That's very helpful. But the developmental review is really a great map for the Planning Commission and to keep us sort of procedurally in the right place and to create a sense of order. So I really appreciated that. I think tonight we're going to focus more on, and I'm sure you'll get there, Lee, but more on as we're in the middle of this long discussion with subdivisions on how in some ways to incentivize subdivisions so they reflect the general plan, I think it may be the way to frame that. So Lee, I'll turn it over to you. I'd like to move on from here about 7:30 or 9:30 your time, just so you know. You're muted, it looks like.
Peg, could you put that, what Lee sent us, could you put that up for us?
Rats, I just took it down. Yes, give me a chance here.
And Lee is muted. Lee, can someone get Lee's attention? You're muted.
I can give Colleen a paper.
Okay.
There you go.
There we go. There we go. Okay, great. I'm going to come to the November meeting. I have been longing to get out west, and November in New England is not a good time. Stick season. And so I will be in Boulder on the 17th to help out with that. But I want to move on at the pace that Matt asked me to keep. I want to go back really, really briefly all the way back to May. When I wrote you a couple of memos, we were hot into the topic of flag lots then. And I sent a memo that explained why the flexibility to have flag lots was a good thing. And then also shortly after that, sent a memo on zoning options for affordable housing, all of which feed into the memo that you have up there from the 16th of September on subdivision design and process. And I think to boil everything there down, although I will be happy to answer questions, and I want to leave more time for questions than I talk here. When you look at something like what Rachel Levinson is thinking about, the existing system doesn't give people in her situation much flexibility. It doesn't give people, we've had discussions off and on and a couple of really interesting comments at hearings and in letters about how to facilitate the provision of housing through making it easier for landowners to gift or to make a bargain sale to someone. Don't have the flexibility to make that easy. And so I think we have come to the point where at the housing forum, we have to go out of that with a sense of whether the community is going to support the flexibility that's needed in the design of subdivisions or not. And we can figure out what to do if not, but if they do, then we have steps building out of that memo on subdivision design that we can take. What I would like to do is just stop right there and answer any questions about those memos about the flexibility in subdivision design, something that we're going to have to come back to. But I want to see if there's questions, and then I'm going to switch over to the development process, which will be the main topic tonight. And Peg, if you could put up the drawings that John sent, I'll segue from those into the process. But I want to see if there are any questions first on the memos going all the way back to May, if you want, the flag lots, the options for affordable housing, and then the guts of subdivision design. Questions or thoughts?
This is Tina.
Hi, Tina.
Are you referring to the limit of what we have in cluster development and then the 5-acre lot development? It's all right, the only thing we have right now. That's what you're referring to, correct?
Yes, it all starts with the 5-acre minimum lot size, of course, that prevails in 90%+ of Boulder. The cluster subdivision ordinance has proven to be ineffective. It hasn't incentivized anyone to follow that path so far. And I think that there are procedural issues with it and substantive issues both. And they're not too hard to correct. And if we can scroll through John's slides in a second here, we'll come back to that topic. But the other thing that I will add to that in response to your question is that scattered throughout the zoning to some degree and in the subdivision regulations as well. There are other obstacles to flexibility for landowners. We've talked a lot about the lot width ratio, for instance. That's one of those. And then the other thing, which is only partially resolved by what you guys sent to the council, is the idea of flag lots. We're stuck pretty much with this first slide that John created, which is 5-acre lots, regardless of the terrain, regardless of the access. And if we want there to be a variety of opportunities for people to have homes, to own land, a variety of opportunities for landowners to implement their vision of what they want to do, then we're going to have to do better than 5-acre lots. Any other questions or thoughts?
So, I mean, sort of like chicken before the egg. If mm-hmm. you're talking about making zoning changes versus subdivisions, where do you actually start, right, is my question.
That's a good question.
Because I keep thinking about, we're up against, and it's like, how to keep forward and wait already some way forward with mm-hmm.
Matt, your audio is sort of cutting out a little bit. Yeah.
Hey, could you bring up the next slide?
Yeah, let's slip on to the next slide here. This is what the cluster provisions in the subdivision regulations, as you have them, will do. It'll allow someone to set aside a clump, a parcel of open space or most likely irrigated space, and create a couple of smaller lots. It doesn't actually increase the number of lots, and it retains the disadvantages of the lot width ratio. And really, honestly, it's just not enough of an incentive, I think, to landowners. There could be somebody in some particular spot who could use this. Nobody has yet, but it could happen. But let's run on down to the next slide, if we may. Really, if we were to flex up on density, and this goes to the memo that I wrote all the way back in May, it's the same parcel. It's just that the average density is 1 per 5 acres instead of 5-acre minimum lots, right? Same number of homes, same amount of development. And one of the simplest things we could do, depending upon how conversations go and how bold people want to be, is that we could change the density requirement to an average, and that alone would free up quite a bit of flexibility for people. I've done that with some success in other places. I don't think it's ideal. I don't think that it's where Boulder should stop. But if you want to take one baby step, you could just say, hey, the 1 to 5 is an average, not a minimum lot size. Wouldn't change the amount of development that is permitted at all, right? So let's go on to the final slide that John prepared here. This is saying, hey, what if we really did incentivize the production of open space and or the production of affordable housing? Would we be willing to add some lots in response to a permanent conservation easement on irrigated land, in response to a perpetually affordable housing lot? The value of land in Boulder, and you're all very well aware that it's not cheap, the value of land in Boulder would allow a landowner to subsidize an affordable lot and the protection of open space and still have a profitable adventure in real estate. So this is just one way of envisioning it that John has put here. It's a little bit like the drawing I did in May for showing how flag lots could work. And in fact, we've created a flag lot here. It's just that it is a lot that is reserved for agriculture or open space. And in the subdivision regs as they go now, I guess if that was an easement under the new amendment, it would be okay. So I just want to make the point that if the community is willing to support it, it isn't very hard to envision and implement some ways to give landowners and ultimately the people who might like to buy a home, give them more options and allow people who have different means in the world, different life, different possibilities to live in Boulder, to keep the community more vital. I always hesitate to be too blunt, but if you end up with a community of 5-acre lots occupied by elderly folk, when you call for the ambulance, nobody's going to come. That's just the way it works. And I think that it would behoove you to think about some of these ways of adding flexibility and for us to talk about them in November. But I would like at this point to switch over to the procedures, which are in my mind almost as important and in many ways more straightforward. So I'll do that, but I'll take another question if people have it.
Just one question for you. This is Matt Lee. How do you implement something like that? Are we talking about changing the clustering ordinance, or is it a different way you'd go at it in the subdivision? Is there an easy answer for that?
There is no one answer. Okay.
Yeah.
It is not particularly difficult. We have to sort of come to a sense of what would work. And I don't want to have people envisioning huge developments. I think we're talking about projects that go from one lot to 7 or 8 lots, right? And go slowly and organically, but providing more opportunities. And we could do simple things in the zoning. Probably the best analogy is, what did we do with commercial? Instead of saying we'll draw a commercial zone somewhere because we didn't know where the market was going to put the energy for commercial development, we just have a procedure that says, if you bring the planning commission a proposal for a commercial development, this is how we'll review it, right? We go down the checklist.
Yeah.
And I envision the same sort of thing for residential projects that protect open space and or provide affordable housing. I don't see us ever saying, no, you can't do a standard 5-acre lot. I think that option remains for people. I think we just incentivize doing something more flexible and creative.
Okay. And so that would be such as creating subdivision developmental standards, basically.
That's right. There would be a set of standards, very similar, and a checklist very similar to what we do with commercial.
Okay,
we would leave the old subdivision regulations in place for those 5-acre lot projects that people want to do. We don't really, they aren't great, but we don't really have to change them. I think what we want to do is put our energy into incentivizing more creative, more flexible behavior by landowners. And we create a new chapter that is very much analogous to the chapter we created for commercial development.
Great. Thank you. That's helpful.
So procedures, I'm going to try to get through in the 30 minutes here. I feel like there was a pretty good response to this memo I wrote about effective development review. And there are different ways to put something like that officially into place. But the best way is for you to come into compliance with the law in a way that you aren't. The state statutes and your own town ordinances say that the Planning Commission should have bylaws, which the Planning Commission does not. There's a little bit in the zoning ordinance that sets up the number of members, the officers. There are some things that would ordinarily go in bylaws, or that at least could go in bylaws, that are in the zoning right now. And my proposal, if it sounds good to people, would be to give you a set of proposed bylaws that incorporate the procedures that I laid out for you in that memo. And then the advantage of this is that it goes fast. The bylaws don't even have to go to a public hearing. They're the Planning Commission's own internal way of doing business, right? Planning Commission, I would probably want to maybe trot this out, at least as an educational thing, with the public, but you can adopt the bylaws with 3 votes.
Is this typical of most towns?
What's typical of most towns is what you do, which is to have not complied. Other towns have a set of bylaws that do what you would expect. They say how many members there are, who are the officers. But you can find, I've been looking at some of them just as I prepare for this. There are places that have very detailed bylaws about how the Planning Commission does business. And do not put so much of that stuff in the ordinances, but use the bylaw. And, you know, there's a good reason for that, which is the Planning Commission can manage its own internal affairs, right? You adopt the bylaws, 3 votes, and you've got a new set of procedures. And to me, that would be the first step in incentivizing more creative land use patterns, is to say, hey, the Planning Commission is going to have a clean, clear procedure here. I think there's minor ways to write an incentive right into the bylaws for people to, at least a symbolic incentive. And I've drafted a set of bylaws that does the typical things, like there's a chairman, there's a vice chair, you know, those things, they're easy. You're already doing it all. We're just embody whatever you're doing right now into that part of the bylaws, when the meetings are, so on. And then if that's comfortable for people, instead of spending a lot more time trying to hammer out what's in the ordinances now, good, bad, or ugly, we just write a really clean set of Planning Commission bylaws that they pick up what you're doing with conditional use permits already, right? And they add the procedure that you're going to use to look at land divisions. And you could be done in a month with that conversation.
A question on that is, what are the drawbacks and why don't many people do it?
Well, a lot of people have subdivision regulations that are better than Boulder's and therefore don't have the conversation that we're having right now. A lot of small towns have what, shall we say, very informal procedures. And that might be the most typical thing, or they have procedures that are written down but are not followed. And what I hope to do is give you procedures that are easy enough to follow. I mean, we're doing pretty well with the conditional use permits. I feel good about that. I feel good about how you guys conducted the hearings that I sit in on. I think that Boulder can take some additional steps and be in a good place. So, you know, and the drawback is that at some point, you got to make the ordinances work with those bylaws. And so we still have to change the ordinances, right? We still have to talk about lot size. Is it an average? Is it a minimum? What's the incentive for good deeds like providing affordable housing? How much of an incentive do we have to give people? Those conversations all still have to happen, but we have a new, more streamlined framework for people who respond to the incentives that you come up with. And that, to me, is, you know, and we can get the procedural discussion out of the way fairly easily if we do this. And, you know, now is the time if we do this, now would be the time to say, well, maybe we need 6 members instead of 5, or, you know, you could fiddle with the bylaws if you wanted to. I'm not sure I see any need to do that. I think things are working okay as they are, but now would be the time.
Real quick, size of the planning commission is in the ordinances. We can't put that in bylaws, but there's a lot of our procedures we can, and I sure support what you're saying, but
yeah, we have to
be careful because some of those things are already codified.
Yeah, so that would be my thought, is that at the November meeting, you've already got speakers determined and such. Hopefully you're going to get a sense of how the community feels about moving forward to provide more housing options. I don't think there's too much of a question about the community wanting to protect open space if there's a good way to do that. You could pop the new procedures into place in the bylaws and then have the conversation about, you know, what form does the flexibility you want to create take? Now, once I have direction, writing it down is not very hard, right? So far, though, we haven't had, and for good reason, we haven't had clarity about that. But I really like the drawings that John provided. We could do more examples like that that are at the right scale, the right level of complexity for Boulder, and go forward. So I guess what I would like to take out of this meeting before I leave you to your other work is a sense from the Planning Commission of, do you want me to go ahead and give you a draft set of bylaws that incorporate the procedures we need and let you see what you think?
Lee, this is, yes, Colleen Thompson. Can you give me another definition of bylaws? Are you talking about like a format or a template or?
Bylaws are rules for how an organization, in this case, the Planning Commission, conducts business.
They're rules.
Yeah, they're the rules that you follow. And, you know, and the simplest example is to say, okay, every set of bylaws, or virtually every set of bylaws at least, will say something about the officers of the organization, right? And so in Boulder, we're going to say that the Planning Commission has a chair and a vice chair, that the council appoints a recording secretary, and that the council appoints 5 members plus an alternate, right? We're not going to change. I see no need, unless you guys tell me, hey, we feel a need. I see no need to change that part of how you're organized. We just follow the law, which the law does say you should have bylaws, and codify that stuff and then make it a set of detailed procedures, very similar to what you read in the memo of, what was that, August 23rd. It'll go right down that line with a bit more detail and a bit more formality. And you would be in business.
Perhaps I could give a little better example, Colleen. For example, almost a year ago, we adopted officially that we're following Robert's Rules of Order.
Yeah.
That would be a bylaw. The fact that we have open public comment as the last thing on the agenda would be a bylaw. We're saying it's setting our internal policies for how we run our meetings, how we process documents. We'll be talking later on, for example, about deadlines for submitting things to get on the agenda. That's the type of thing we put as a bylaw, but they aren't codified as ordinances, so we don't have to go to the town council to change if we say we want things to the zoning administrator 10 days before instead of 7 days before. Does that help?
Yeah, thanks, John.
So basically, we're formalizing our internal business.
That's right. That's what bylaws do.
Okay.
Now, if you were here in New England, bylaws are bigger and mean more things. But for the most part, in every other part of the United States, bylaws are about how you as a commission do business.
So what does the PC think? Is this, are you weighing in favor of something like this? Should we have Lee draft up a draft of bylaws, or where are you at?
This is Elena. Yeah, I think so. I thought this memo was really, really helpful. Just the way it's written and some of Lee's suggestions. As someone who feels newish to Planning Commission and wants to be helpful, I often feel unsure of what the right procedural pathways are, and I feel like this was really helpful. Lee, I also have a question that I'm sure these details might not matter right now, but just out of curiosity, one of the things in here, you're talking about procedurally like following up on a decision, and that someone should tell the applicant what we've decided in written form. Do you know if that's typically done by the chair or the secretary or the zoning administrator or someone specific?
Sure, I can answer that. What we try to do ideally, and in small communities with limited resources, the ideal is harder to meet. In a place that had a staff, they could do it. They would simply create what's called a record of decision. And that record of decision would say, "Dear Mr. Smith, the Planning Commission approved your proposed subdivision on whatever day, and it did so with the following conditions of compliance. And so you are now authorized to move forward." Or alternatively, "Dear Mr. Smith, the Planning Commission denied your application, and here are the reasons why." You can't wait for the minutes, at least from the landowner and developer's point of view. They don't want to wait a whole month until the commission meets again and maybe doesn't meet again for some reason. Somebody's ill, there's a holiday. So you would, in these bylaws, it will say that the zoning administrator would be responsible for creating a record of decision and getting it out to everyone within a certain number of days. And we would try to be as generous as we think is reasonable with the number of days the zoning administrator has to do that. But that's what happens. It basically is a letter that says, here's what the commission decided, and spells out any conditions of approval, which there normally will be, in some detail. And, you know, to the extent that those conditions of approval entail protecting open space or agricultural land, to the extent that they entail providing affordable housing, to the extent that they entail building a road, any of the things that a subdivider might do, then there will be enough detail there to provide the developer with guidance and for you to enforce that guidance if you need to. So sometimes, I mean, for really big projects, I've written letters like that that were 40 pages long, but we're not talking about having to go there in Boulder, I hope. You can come up with a template for a development agreement that the developer signs, acknowledging that they understand the conditions. Right? That answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Any other comments from the PC?
I wanted to ask you, Lee, just go back. So if we did so-called standards for subdivisions, would that mean then that we wouldn't have to go into changing zoning, the zoning here in town?
No, we would still have to change the zoning to meet your goals for subdivisions. It doesn't mean we'd have to change the map or the layout of the districts per se, although a person could maybe make an argument for doing that at some point. But what it really means is that if we get clear enough about the goals, then you look at the zoning and say, okay, we can't meet these goals with certain provisions of the zoning ordinance. We'd come up with a list, and we need to change those. I'm not sure I want to predict precisely what you're going to say about how you want to change those. There's a lot of discussion to be had, but I think it gets back to the bottom line that I started this conversation off with, which is, if you're going to give landowners more flexibility, you're going to have to make some changes. And there are some obvious things. We can talk about the lot width ratio again. We can talk about the potential for flag lots again. You know, there's some things we've already gone over. And then there's just the bottom line of that 5 dwelling unit per acre minimum that, you know, to the extent that that stands, you're not going to accomplish your goals. And so you have to decide whether your goals are more important than the continuity of that 5-acre minimum.
Thank you.
Sure.
John or Tina, any comments on pros, cons, and if you, we want Lee to go forward with this?
I think it's a great idea. I will be sending Lee some email comments, just some feedback. We seem to work together very well offline, so I'll be continuing to do that. But I think one of the key points, we're also not only giving the developer flexibility, but we're giving ourselves flexibility. When I look at, for example, and I hate to use South Lake as the example all the time, but since I own property there, I deal with planning in Salt Lake. Much more what they have to do is make a finding, and that has very specific legal meaning. It means that you assemble the facts, evaluate the facts, and come to a conclusion. But they typically have to make a finding that something is suitable, which means they can consider all the site-specific circumstances, which under our current ordinances, we can't. That's why we got something like what the Full Moon Farms subdivision proposal, which was, Rachel said, they struggled to meet the ordinance rather than starting with what was best for the land. So we are giving both the developer and ourselves flexibility to consider site-specific conditions if we do this right. So yes, right. I think we should go forward on the bylaws. Thank you, Lee, for the work so far, and I will be sending you some offline comments.
I'd like to move forward with the bylaws too, this is Colleen.
Okay, Tina?
I agree.
Okay. And I'm in agreement as well. So Lee, that's the go-ahead if you would draft up.
I will have a draft to you before the regular November meeting.
Thank you.
And then you can go into the November Housing Forum with that, not as a major part of what the Housing Forum is going to be about, but with that in mind. And I will be around for a couple of days at the time of the Housing Forum. If the Planning Commission wanted to, you know, schedule a special meeting and get together and talk about this stuff in person, we could do that too.
Great. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Sure. I'm going to leave you to the rest of your agenda unless there are any more questions.
I think we're going to call it there. Have a good evening. Thank you. And
you guys too.
Yep. See you in town. Take care. Before long.
Yep.
Okay, we're going to switch gears here on the agenda, and we're going to move to discussion and voting for the vote. The Fogel Fuller. I almost got my tongue tied there. Preliminary subdivision. So we've received all the paperwork. And gotten the go-ahead from our zoning administrator. And let's see, before the Planning Commission discusses anything, I wanna just see, out of courtesy, put it over to you, Anson, if there's anything you wanna add to the work that you've done, and then we'll go from there.
Appreciate it, Matt. I mean, I'd love to not waste anyone's time blathering on if I don't have to. The real question is, has everyone been able to read the cover letter? And if not, I'm happy to provide a relatively quick summary of that. But if you've read it, I mean, at this point, I think it's pretty straight, pretty clear cut.
Yeah. And due diligence, you know, I have read it, and I hope everyone else in the PC has as well. So
I understand everyone's busy, though. If it's helpful for me to provide a summary, I'm happy to do so of the process to date.
Why don't you give us a 1-2 minute summary then?
First of all, thanks everybody for your time. Really encouraging to hear John and all of you talking about more sophisticated and considerate growth patterns and subdivision ordinance. But in terms of our subdivision, just to recap, we have 20 acres currently in two lots, and each one with a single family home on it that was pre-existing, Bevan's old house. The second, we have a home under construction, and we house three locals in the lower level of our primary home, one of whom, Nick Vincent, we simply would like to carve off one additional lot and sell that below market value to Nick. While doing that, we also are changing the lot boundaries between the other two pre-existing houses to be more accurately reflecting the land around those houses and to bring them into compliance because their aspect ratio is out of compliance. That's the short version. We actually did a preliminary conversation with Curtis in early 2021. So we've been working on this process since the late winter of 2021. We filed our initial application formally to the Planning Commission early this spring. We've since we've continued to deal with various regulatory requirements. The commission is familiar with most of them, I believe. The most recent, since the last time we spoke, we have resolved the road sharing agreement and easement with our neighbors, the Kellys, to the south. So that's resolved and has been filed with the county. And we've obtained a variety of other sort of outstanding items. One is making sure with the state that we can, we have plenty of available water to supply two dwellings from our well, but we needed to codify that and make sure that was good with the state. We hired an attorney. That's been handled. And then the Southwest Utah Department of Public Health did approve our water plan and approved our septic system engineering perk test and plan. And I think that covers the majority of it. Pete Benson did approve, as everyone I'm sure is aware, Pete Benson did approve our fire protection plan. I know that for good reason is under revision, but Pete did approve that. It's submitted. We've made some physical changes on the property to comply with some comments from Pete and from Corey at the fire department. So I think that's it. Sorry, that was 3 minutes.
That's okay. Thank you, Anson. Yeah, thorough work for sure. So let's turn it back over to the Planning Commission before we go into a vote, discussion. So obviously our options are we can pass it as is, pass it with conditions. So let's go through commissioner by commissioner and see where we're at.
Okay, I'll go first. After through it, I did not see anything that was against the regulations that we have in the ordinance at this time, but that's so I'm assuming we pass it on to the town council.
Okay, thank you, Tina.
I saw that April had put a message out about 4 o'clock this afternoon, and I'm assuming that message is telling us, just like we're looking at this preliminary subdivisions, that there's nothing that she wanted added or subtracted, which there's no subtraction, but added at that time with her final say as for her report. So I don't have any problems with it going forward either.
Thank you, Colleen.
This is Elena. Yeah, I thought the application was really thorough in addressing all our ordinances, so I feel good.
Okay. John?
Yeah, definitely the same, that I think all the concerns that were brought up after the public hearing were addressed. And I'm going to just kind of recap a couple things here that were discussed outside the meeting, so we'll get them on the record. There's no substantive change. Everything that's been changed from what we saw before at the hearing was correct. Things brought up at the hearing, so there is certainly no need for another public hearing on this one. As you say, the town council has final say, so we're passing a recommendation on to the town council. One thing I would like to get clarified, because our wording is confusing. We call it a preliminary approval, but what it really is a approval to begin doing a specific development with the understanding that if all those items are done, the final approval follows. Our order says it's a ministerial action, which means there's no discretion. If Anson does what's on the plat, the final approval has to be given. So I guess the question is how much significant infrastructure work or other items is there that needs to be done? Anson, could you answer that?
Happily.
If this were a normal subdivision where someone was putting in roads and streets and hydrants, it would be
sure.
They have to build the roads, streets, and hydrants. But you've got a lot of that since it's an existing lot.
I can clarify that, John. There's precisely nothing to be done. Everything once we have the subdivision approved, there's always the chicken egg problem with the state, but once it's approved, we have some procedural issues, mainly just to split up the water right, the underground water right between the two lots, and file it with the county, and that's it. And then the whole goal of the entire thing is to be able to sell the vacant lot adjacent to Lower Boulder Road to Nick, which we would do relatively quickly. But with respect to the subdivision application and the specifics contained within with respect to our intent and the subdivision, I can't think of a single physical element that isn't already complete. It's all built.
The reason I'm bringing this up is the way our ordinances read, if there's infrastructure required, then the final approval is a separate step. But if no infrastructure is required, then the preliminary approval by the town council also serves as the final approval. So that's what I was trying to clarify.
John, if you don't mind, I was actually going to ask that after you finished this procedurally, but you just used the word town council. Did you mean planning commission? Because it is unclear to me what is the procedural sort of next steps with respect to a subdivision that has no infrastructure, no further infrastructure work. With respect to the jurisdiction and the process between the commission and the council.
My understanding is if we approve the preliminary plan, it's the preliminary subdivision, we're advising the town council to pass it. It next would go to town council more as a procedural thing, and that would get you the final plat subdivision upon our recommendation.
Thank you, Matt. That's my reading of the ordinance as well, but I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. But to answer John's question, there is no outstanding work to be completed.
Okay. John, anything else?
Well, I think so. All the fire stuff that Pete had asked for has been taken care of.
So, yeah, that's the one thing I wanted to check in. So with the fire marshal's approval, he considered it adequate fire protection and had a list of conditions that he thought to add to that. And in deference to the fire marshal, those would be the conditions that I'd add to the in passing the preliminary subdivision. I just wanted to check in with the rest of the PC and see. Do you have that, Peg, that April 12th letter, I think it is?
If you don't, I do. I can.
Yeah, and I know you've done some of them already, but that, you know, I want you to be aware that that's what, you know, that would be the conditions that we'd put on it.
Answer. Can you see that now?
Yes. Thank you. I know you've done some of that already, but there's some other things that would have to be taken care of down the line. Planning Commission, are you aware of this?
Yeah.
And how do you feel about it?
I'm good.
Okay. So That said, I am going to make a motion to pass this preliminary subdivision with these conditions from the fire marshal.
I'll second that.
Okay, all in favor or any more discussion?
Who seconded that? I didn't hear.
Colleen, sorry.
Oh, Colleen, okay, thank you.
Any more discussion before we take a vote? Okay, I'll take that as a no. Matt, or all in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Jenny Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Barath, aye.
That's everybody. Okay. So I imagine, Anson, that there's some work to do with, you'll have to check in with April to make sure that final, I'm not sure exactly if, I don't think there's anything to change, but to make that official and get stuff sent on for the town council meeting in November for your final plat subdivision approval.
Yeah, I'll talk to them and thank you all very much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, what time is it? Does anyone need a break? Are we good?
We're good.
Okay, then we're gonna move on to the Rice conceptual plan. So I see, is Andrea on the call?
They're here.
Okay. Thank you. So, I wonder if you would, give us an overview, briefly, Andy, although we've read your cover letter, seen your map and so on, but just maybe tell us in your own words, and then we will be asking some questions about it and then tell you how to proceed from there.
Yeah, please.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Matt, Andy here. Just as a real quick overview to what's going on here is that Jack and I have come to an arrangement to continue my employment in Boulder. Obviously putting roots too deep in a town that you can't afford to live in is a dangerous concept. We approached Jackie a little over a year ago with the idea of buying land, and she very graciously and kindly offered to sell us this lot at a price that we could afford. We've been back and forth getting the line set just right. It's been surveyed, it's been tested. We've been back and forth and tried our best to make sure that we can proceed inside the ordinances. We feel like we're ready, and we would really love to get things moving.
Great. Thank you. Questions from the Planning Commission about this project to Andy. I'll start just visually. I'm just trying to see where the road is actually accessing the property. I mean, not Schoolhouse Ledge Road, but the, I think it's 100 North. Am I correct?
Correct.
That's on the south end of the property.
A Street on a plat map. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
You can see where it was and where it was moving to. So it's directly between Donna Jean and the Knuckles property.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the church's property on the street, right?
Correct. It would border the street. It's not, it doesn't come into the thing, but yeah, just borders it right there.
So is it between Donna Jean and
churches?
And
church,
the house.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Okay.
Which is what now?
No.
And Andy, would that be your main access point to the property? Are you considering that the building envelope would be on that sort of the southern end of the property?
That's correct. The two other alternatives just don't work. Jackie's very clear that she doesn't want use of the Schoolhouse Ledge Road. That's a condition of the subdevelopment. Then the B Street is just the topography makes it all but impossible.
Okay. And what lies ahead of you in opening that road? I wasn't at the town council meeting last night, but.
We've discussed it with the town council, and it sounds like everyone is in favor of proceeding. I think there's work to be done yet as far as understanding how and when that can happen. Ideally, this is something we can get moving on fairly quickly. We'd love to see the road open and have the ability to start breaking ground by the time the frost is off in the spring.
Gotcha. Any other questions from the Planning Commission?
Yeah, a couple general ones. As far as planning, since we're talking about concept and what you put on your final plat, knowing where the building envelope will be an issue. I think you've got some topography that lets you do a delightful house with great views, but you know. I think some clarity on that would help because it ties into two other issues. One is stormwater, as we found out with Kip's driveway getting washed out. We need to know what's going to happen with water coming off this town street onto your property and then down onto Jackie's property. So that's the stormwater protection plan part. And the other one, which we've not really talked about a lot in previous subdivisions, but should have, is defensible space, because that hillside is been the site of two fires in recent years. So I think, you know, having a good proposal for how you're going to do basically the urban wildland interface code, which deals with construction materials, decks, flammable decks, and all that, as well as vegetation removal to have defensible space around the house, would really, I think, protect you, protect the town, protect any neighbors.
Yeah, great. They both actually kind of tie together. The only proposed building lot that we have as far as an envelope would be directly on the southeast corner. It sits right at the top of a hill with two natural drainages off of each side. That hill would essentially be the top of the hill anyways, would be essentially cleared off and leveled, which would protect the building and the surrounding natives, pinion and juniper and grass line that's there from the impacts that we're going to have developing it and from the impacts that fire might have coming back to us. Watershed should be perfect, just follows two natural drainages that you can see on the map, should go right around both ways, and we'll be very conscious of how we develop that, and it'll all be engineered in order to make sure that we capitalize on the best drainage possible.
Do you mind going up at the morning?
So the house would specifically be here. So water naturally comes down through this draw here, and then there's another one here that would shed off. And this will essentially, this big slope would essentially be cleared, leveled, and then terracing done here to protect the home site, and also to protect the hillside itself from any impact that digging might have and the construction in that area might have on the site itself.
So with the flashing, that flash, lot one.
I can't really answer that question.
That's the 30% slope.
That would be an unacceptable building lot.
Okay. So the lot, it's a square lot, correct?
It's more of a rectangle.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay.
It follows the natural line of schoolhouse light with the offset that we built in.
And where is Highway 12?
Up here.
Okay, that's
good. Peg, maybe you could move the thing over so we could see that other view that's there, the one that's just off the edge, the right edge of the picture.
And Andy, on the right there where it says all those different lots, are those all like pre-parceled lots that were done a long time ago, or is this
correct? With the exception of the Scotty Mitchell lot that was cut.
And is that, I mean, that's Clarkston?
No, that was
That's Boulder Town site from the 30s.
No, but what I'm saying is those lots that were 25, 26, those were all pre-parceled a long time ago, right?
Yes.
By Dale Clarkston, probably. No?
No, that was when they surveyed the town in the 1930s.
That's what I'm, yeah. That's what I'm.
I think Clarkson was right
around
here. No, Clarkson. Yeah, Clarkson was 60s. 60s.
Okay.
Yeah, these
thank
are from the
30s. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Andy about this lot before we give him some feedback?
So, Andy, it's rectangle. What is that above it like that? Like, do you have that curb in there? Is that part of it?
Yeah, this is Schoolhouse Led Road.
Yeah.
Accesses Boulder Creek Canyon Ranch. And so our property line takes a direct offset off of that road and just follows it exactly.
Oh, I see. Okay, so see, I thought it was just the smaller thing. It's all of that right now. Right? Yeah, how many acres is it again?
5.9.
Okay.
Looking forward to having the preliminary application complete.
Yeah, so Andy, in my mind, it's a good concept as a conceptual plan. I appreciate the work that you did on, already looking at the roads, road requirements, utilities, culinary water, fire protection, septic, et cetera. Your next step, of course, would be to start working with the zoning administrator to get all the details needed for the preliminary subdivision application. Once all those are in and approved by April, then we as the commission can review, have a public hearing, and put it to vote. So there's still obviously a bunch of work ahead of you, a lot of papers to sign off, but that's pretty straightforward. If you need specific help navigating it, start with April, and then and if you want any of us ever on the ground to help look at anything, although it seems like you got it under control, then you can reach out to us on that.
Yes, I was going to say, Lee, in his recommendations, talks about doing a site visit, but I think this is a very straightforward one, no real complexity. It was fun looking at Google Earth to see that where that road, I finally figured out, is hidden by the trees.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we've got, I don't think we need a site visit, but if you wanted to invite us over to look, we'd come over.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, so is that clear enough for you guys to move forward?
Definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah, they're not.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
So again, following those recommendations, we can have, since April's not on the call, I'll work with April to have her send something to Andy, summarizing what we just said.
Thank you, John.
It'll be April's responsibility to send the letter.
Okay, we're an hour in. Does anyone need a break before we move on to the next agenda item?
Let's take a quick break and then we'll take fires.
Okay, let's take a 4-minute break back at 8:08.
Okay,
I don't have my virtual gavel here, but I'm calling order to the court. So our next on the agenda is we're moving into the discussion on ordinance regulating, discussion and vote for the ordinance regulating fire protection in subdivisions. Before we go there, I just want to say that we received and read the letter from Pence, Dan, I think you might be in the audience. It's been read. We appreciate your comments. Since we're not in public hearing, I will not be reading it out loud tonight, but I want you to know that it's been considered. So thank you. And let's see. So as of last meeting, John, you were going to do a little research on, I don't know, it was the distance or something. Anyways, I'm going to turn it over to you and tell us what you came up with, and then we'll move on from there.
Okay. So right now we have this, the document that's up on the screen right now is the document that went to public hearing. And at the public hearing, Peg, could you bring up the PowerPoint, the last slide? Jim Catmull raised some issues and basically said he wanted to get an opinion from the state fire marshal. So I did that. We had a good email exchange, and we'll just wait for the Claire to come up. Basically, Ted Black, state fire marshal, said the ordinance looks fine, but can you get that?
It's not me, it's the computer.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so I'll just wait for the next one to come up. There we go.
Oh, great.
Okay, so basically he says that it looks fine, that we could consider going to 500 feet between hydrants, since that's the distance most towns use. And since we discussed various distances at the hearing, that certainly would be within scope of what we presented to the public hearing. He says it looks fine, and then he says you should certainly read appendixes A, B, C, and D. So I'll give a quick summary of those appendices of the fire code. Regarding that, there's always some confusion because years ago, the codes in Utah were the Uniform Fire Code, the Uniform Building Code, Uniform Electrical Code. Years ago, the state of Utah went to the international codes. And that is what is adopted at the state level. And Jim Catmull some months ago made a motion to adopt the latest edition of the fire code that the state has, which means we have in effect adopted the 2018 fire code, which is what these appendices are from. So Appendix A talks about having an appeal board. And we would have a great deal of difficulty doing that in Boulder. It's much written for big jurisdictions because they say you should have a professional engineer, a fire protection official, a licensed contractor, an industrial safety expert, and so forth. We don't have that in town. But if something was sufficiently complex, we would be able to cite the code as a basis for how to handle an appeal. Appendix B deals with fire water flow. And that Appendix B explicitly allows the local fire official to reduce flow requirements in rural and suburban areas where full flow is impractical. And Appendix B explicitly allows using NFPA 1142 as a design guideline, which is pretty much what Anson has done for his private fire protection system. So we're pretty much following Appendix B. Appendix C deals with spacing of hydrants. And that one allows 500-foot spacing between hydrants along a street when the fire flow requirement is less than 1,000 gallons a minute. And we have no buildings in Boulder that require a higher fire flow. To get a higher than that, you'd have to be talking about things like a Walmart big box or a factory. So we certainly can do the 500-foot spacing if we want. It'd be consistent with the code. And Appendix D deals with fire department access roads, which Pete has emphasized many times as at least as important, if not more so than hydrants. We have been requiring a drivable surface and turnarounds on new subdivisions. So we are in effect following that as well. As an aside, I'll mention that, we should be, as part of community fire safety, the town should be encouraging these grandfathered properties to bring their fire access roads up to at least the urban wildland interface code standard. So I think, we've had a hearing. We've now gotten an opinion from the state fire marshal that what we have looks fine. So So I would like to put a motion out that we send the September 8th version of the ordinance 2022-4, an ordinance regulating fire protection and subdivisions, to the town council with a recommendation to adopt as amended. So then we can put that up for discussion. We have a second.
So can we see the ordinance, Peg? So John, at the end of the ordinance that you had three, can you show me that? Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's not what you just read.
No.
Okay, so yeah, right. So what I'm asking is, are you going to talk about those at all? Or are you looking at doing this exactly how it's written? Are you including those?
Those are, okay, somehow there was a confusion that those are options. Those are three clauses.
Clauses.
Clause one says that, yeah.
Oh.
All yeah, not options, clauses. It's all included.
So could you scroll down, Peg?
Yeah.
I just want to look at that again for a minute. Okay.
There's.
Yeah, so, okay. And then what you deleted and what you added there, it's just the 400 feet, right?
Yeah, so let me walk you.
Yeah, okay. No, I'm okay. I just want to reconfirm that.
Okay.
Okay, can you go down just a little bit farther, Peg? Okay, down farther. I just kind of want to. Oh, and so where's the pages with the clauses?
That was in the discussion for the, those are items for discussion that we were asking for comment on at the public hearing. Okay. And somehow people got thought that those were options. So
okay, I just want to clarify that. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah,
that's all I'm doing. I just wanted to clarify that.
So actually, do we have a second on that motion?
Yeah, I'll second that motion. And then is there any discussion?
I have something to say.
Now we can discuss the motion.
Oh,
yeah.
We have to second it before we.
Move and second and then discuss.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm the same way as you.
You're fine. I saved those for the 500. I mean, we can, and it doesn't make sense.
Okay, so that would be a motion to amend.
Yeah. Motion to amend. 500
feet. Somebody want to second that?
I'll second that. This is Elena.
Instead of
400.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So then I guess we would procedurally vote on the amendment to change 400 feet to 5, that all subdivision lots shall be within 500 feet of a fire hydrant.
What I understand is there's a difference between each fire hydrant on the road and how many feet it is from the actual building to the fire hydrant. Is that not right?
Okay. So our current order, since this is dealing with subdivisions, and since currently we don't regulate the building envelope, we don't know when the subdivision is approved where the building is going to be. So we have historically regulated how far it is from the how frequently the hydrants are placed along the road,
right?
And how far the lot from a hydrant. And the state fire marshal said he was fine with that.
But when we do know where the building's going to be, it has to be so many feet from the building once we know where it is. If we're approving something that's being structured, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, this is the discussion we've been having. That would need to be in the building permit section of our code, not in the subdivision design portion, because we don't. So, at some point we could.
But yes, the house, the residential place has to be in proximity to a certain distance of the hydrant.
Yeah.
Correct.
Two issues. Okay, thank you.
So where are we on the motion?
So we have had a motion to change in clause A, changing 400 feet to 500 feet. That was moved by Tina and seconded by Elena. So we should take a motion on amending the draft.
Okay. So is there...
Don't you so vote where, on the motion?
Where feasible is in the standards for all proposed streets under fire hydrants, right? Is that what that sentence is? Is that what you're... Do you know what I'm saying?
Are you asking about the deletion?
Yes.
Okay, so right now we have, yeah, that sentence that is struck out.
And so that's in where it says standards for all proposed streets.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're deleting that and putting it in the new section 451G3 fire protection requirements rather than as street standards, which was also confusing.
Right. Okay. Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussions?
Matt, this is Peg. Okay, so Tina has made a motion to amend item A.
Correct.
From 400 to 500, and it was seconded by Elena. Do you take a vote on her motion to amend before you?
We're still discussing.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Right?
Elena seconded.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we could be a little more informal, but technically we should vote on the amendment and then discuss the rest of it, because there may be other amendments.
Okay. So sorry, for clarity, because I'm not hearing everybody in there, but so we need to make a vote on the amendment and then go on to the second part, the rest of it?
Yeah, anything else? If someone
okay, so let's take a vote on the amendment section A to 500 feet. Okay. So all in favor of changing it from 400 to 500 feet to meet up with traditional state code. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Brandt, aye.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. So now is our older motion still on the table? Or do we need to remotion that?
No, now we're back to the original motion unless someone wants to make another motion to amend anything else.
Okay. Is there any other discussion or amendments that anyone on the Planning Commission would like to bring up? No. Okay. Then I'm going to move forward with a vote to pass this on to Town Council. All in favor of the ordinance, Matt Cochran, aye.
Elena Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
John Brandt, aye.
Thank you. And John, thank you particularly for your work on this.
Thank you,
John. You're welcome. It's actually quite enjoyable to do these things.
Well, I'm glad.
That's our guy.
Okay, great. So we're going to move on to just let's get a report on the housing forum, I suppose. Reports, John and or Tina, what have you learned since our working meeting? What's happened? And then the second after reports, what's next and how can we go forward and support what you're up to?
Okay,
I have nothing to report.
Tina's been very helpful with offline discussions. So let's see. The first important one, I do have the town hall reserved for the meeting evening, and I asked for both rooms in case we get to the point where we either have an overflow crowd or just want to have breakout sessions. So we have the town hall reserved. Last night I made a status update to the town council, just telling them what we're doing. Jim Campbell agreed to speak at the meeting on behalf of the town council this afternoon. I know Judy Drain sent a invitation to County Commissioner Jerry Taylor on behalf of the town, inviting him to participate in the meeting. There was a great open house in Escalante for the fourplex that Neighborhood Works opened there. Colleen came. Jim Catmull was there, Elizabeth was there, so we had really good representation from Boulder. And I had a good friendly conversation with Jerry Taylor, and he says, you want to make sure the county's involved right from the start, so we'll get keeping the county involved as well. They could be partners in this. So we've made that progress. I'm going to recommend we try to have another work meeting sometime between now and our November 10th meeting. And I want to schedule it to so that Charlene Wild can participate, and also Dave Conine, who I guess has dropped off the Zoom meeting. And I was waiting for a call back from Charlene today, but didn't get it. So what I will do is, once I find her availability, I can get with you, Matt, and you could call a special work meeting that meets people's schedule sometime in that time frame.
Okay. So I'll wait on your assessment with Charlene's availability to do that.
And I think there's two clarifications I do want to share here. One thing, you brought up scale, and that's an important thing. And as Lee said, we're not talking about a 100-house subdivision project like they're managing to do in Moab, where they had a generous donor who donated the land for a huge subdivision. That was wonderful. But, we're talking about the town from, we're talking about allowing our individual projects, a few houses at a time, and on parcels where the owner is willing to support affordable housing. Some people said, well, where should it go? I'm saying, well, we don't discuss where people should build their houses, private houses. It should be where a landowner wants to build affordable housing is where we make the system possible for it to happen. And the other clarification is that, we're not talking about the town providing housing. We're talking about the town creating a structure where people who want to provide affordable housing can do so. So that's about where we've gotten to. I think we'll have a good meeting. Things are moving along and getting it organized.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. And I think that's a critical distinction that you made there, that it's not the town that's trying to push affordable housing, but just making that option available to anyone who chooses to move that direction. Okay, so anything other than that working meeting, which I'm going to wait to hear on you and calling that, is there anything else we need to do as a commission in order to help move this forward, get it advertised, get it out, or I guess we can discuss that at the meeting?
I did invite Tess Barkett, who I guess isn't on the call either, to write an article or two for the Insider about this to get some publicity.
Okay.
We should certainly get it out on Pegboard as a save your date quickly, and then repeat that about a week before the meeting.
Okay.
I can work on that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. So, okay, thank you for that work. And we're going to move on to what I have listed as number 8. My numbering is probably different than everyone else's. So documentation for meetings and policy discussion. I'm not sure who's leading this one. This was something about, Peg, maybe you can help too with the 7-day in advance, like we were going to come up with some sort of policy for, I believe, for document intake that allows enough time for you and for the PC to digest these things before we actually have a meeting.
Right. You've already talked, I guess actually this stuff would be forwarded to Lee for the bylaws, correct?
Okay, correct.
But you've already decided on the 14 days to April. That's already something we do. And of course we're required the 10 days prior to a public hearing. That's another hard date that's state mandated. What you talked about last time had to do with having documentation related to an application into the Planning Commission 1 week prior to the meeting. So that would mean basically that April has a deadline to turn that documentation over to us a week before the meeting. And then my notes are kind of unclear. Maybe John can remember what was said here, that there was discussion about, I'm not sure if it was like 1 week or the Friday before the meeting. Oh, no. Okay. So the Friday before the meeting is when the agenda would be solidified and documentation related to the agenda that needs to be uploaded on the website would be provided. That would be meeting materials relevant to the applications. That would be any kind of, frankly, that would be the minutes, excuse me. It would be those kind of things that you need to have time to read and digest before the meeting that we know are on the agenda. And then the last item was miscellaneous items. Miscellaneous kind of semi-last minute items, but by Monday before the meeting. So that would be like Lee Nellis's memos that he sends sometimes the night before would be instead Monday before the meeting. So those are kind of the three main breakdowns that you've talked about previously.
Okay. And not only for the Planning Commission, but for you, Peg, because some of that relates to you. Does that sound reasonable and doable?
It's reasonable. I would suggest some kind of a clause that an emergency clause, because there's always something that comes up at the last minute.
Right. But
if we could plan to have documents relative to a meeting that we know are existing to me by these deadlines, then I can get things uploaded in a timely way that the public also has access to them.
Okay. I just think, I think we're doing pretty good, but I think it's really important because we've heard from the public too, and for us that we have time to sit with this information. The public has time to sit with this information, and it allows for some discussion even before the meetings, outside, of things, and it's important. So,
I want to say that I appreciate the documents. This is Colleen, the documents that we got ahead of time. It was nice to be able to sit there and look at them and have time and discuss it with other Planning Commission meeting members. And so I appreciate that.
Okay, so can we send those relative times on to Lee for the bylaws then?
Yes.
I'll include that in the feedback to him, yes.
Oh, do you want to, John, are you doing that or do you want me to?
I'll be sending some other comments so I could just roll these in.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
To recap what I think we said. So on materials for subdivision applications, which takes April some time to process, we want them 14 days before the meeting. By statute, we have to have any requests for a public hearing in 10 days before. We say working documents, we're requesting, if possible, to get them by the week before. So that's Friday of the, so we have the weekend. Miscellaneous documents by Monday. And of course, if something's open for public comment, we can accept comments from the public right up to the meeting date if they want to have good writing instead of in person. But that also gives the public time to look at these documents and give us feedback, which is always appreciated.
There was one other item I think I mentioned last month, and that was I had made a note, I think, in my public hearing notice that people needed to have their comments in 24 hours in advance. That's not like a deadline or hard and fast. The intent of my saying that was to get it uploaded to the website rather than the day of the meeting. So if you want to include that as well, it's just kind of a policy that if someone wants their comment available to the public, not to assume that I can get it up there before 24 hours in advance.
Yeah,
that makes
good.
And then we have a clause in there that says the chair's discretion if there's a bona fide emergency, although we still have the hard 24 hours on the publishing the agenda.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I think a bylaw like this will help greatly when somebody demands immediate response on something without giving us time to process it.
Right. No, I think this will put us all on the same page, literally. All right. Unless there are any other comments there, I'm going to move on and let's see. Okay, I'm going to open the floor for final public comments. If you and the public have any comments, please state your name and tell us what you're thinking. Let's see. I'm going to go to Judy Drain, who has her hand up first.
Okay. The only comment I wanted to make is I know that the Planning Commission wanted the council to give some guidance in the housing forum or even on housing period. And I think we're all of basically the same opinion that what you're doing will allow us all as a community to have input and decide which way that we want to go. It's hard to give direction on something that we have been trying to get a hold on for years. So to me, you guys have done an amazing job. You've set this up. We have some way to go, things to talk about. And I really suspect you're going to have a decent turnout. I hope that you do. You know, we've been giving, the state gave us the tourism thing when they advertised all our parks. So it's something that we have to live with. So not only tourism, but finding places for young people that want to come. And there's going to be some big decisions we have to make. Ordinance, just like John says, we're going to have to change some ordinances. We're going to have to give some. And I love what Lee was talking about tonight. So hopefully with everything that you're all doing, we can come up with some kind of a plan. Could it mess up? Possibly. But the bottom line is we have to have a place to start. And what you guys are doing is really amazing. And I'm looking forward to that meeting. So that's basically all I wanted to say. We're not just putting it off. We're like you. We're a community and it's up to all of us. So anyway, that's my 2 cents worth.
Great. Thanks. Thank you, Judy. Great to hear. Donna Owen.
Hi. I just would like to make a comment, firstly, that I'm not about the fire hydrants versus a fire marshal being able to just say, yeah, you can do this instead. I know that I don't remember right now whether we actually still are requiring fire hydrants in our subdivision ordinance. I know that the town passed some kind of the 400 feet, I believe. And now you're making the recommendation to change that to 5. And I understand that, but I don't understand. And I'm not saying it isn't right. I'm just saying, I don't understand that there was no fire hydrants required on, or even spoken about it on the, either of the 2 subdivisions that were discussed tonight. And mm-hmm. All I could gather was that Anselm has some kind of private way of fighting fire, and that we are able to go around that 400 foot. And I know you can't comment on this. I am actually asking my comment to be sort of going out towards the town council, that when they go ahead and look at all of these amendments that were made, this ordinance are going to look at the amendment and these subdivisions, that they could please finally make something clear. Do we have to have this or this, or what? Is it just subjective to our fire authority only, how he feels on each property, or is there a strict rule, and what is it? That just would be my comment, because I'm kind of left being confused. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Donna. Are there any other comments, final public comments from the floor? I can't really see the town room, but is anyone budging from their chair over there, jumping out of their seat?
You can always talk. Okay.
Can I go ahead and make a motion to close the meeting?
Okay, yeah.
Upcoming business.
Oh, I forgot. Upcoming business. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, we almost jumped the gun. Upcoming business. So, yeah, thank you for the comments. And let's go to upcoming business for November. Let's see here. So, number one is we'll be looking at a draft of bylaws for our development, part of the developmental review with Lee.
And you may have an RV, amended RV CUP from
Rhode. Okay, Park. so the possible Gardner amended CUP. Okay.
John, are you working with that?
Not really. I mentioned, you know, I just kind of waiting for him to submit something to us.
Okay.
Yeah. So we also want, we'll finalize arrangements for the community meeting.
Yep.
And if we have time, I mean, this is going to be like a 6-month project, but we can really start at least initiate some discussion on subdivision, replacing the cluster subdivision with performance-based rules that incentivize advancing the general plan. And I'm going to suggest that the first step we do is really explicitly identify what are our goals, and then start getting down into the details. So if we even just say, okay, here are the goals from the general plan that we're trying to implement, we've made great progress, but we can initiate that discussion.
So let's put that in a few words. Initial discussion on
call it performance-based subdivision procedures.
Okay, thank you. And then there might be a few curveballs, but we don't know what they are yet, right?
What are you going to subdivide?
What's that?
What was your subdivision?
Matt, I have a question, not related to business, but did you guys invite Caden Figgins to the housing forum?
I've waited to invite Jerry Taylor since Caden works for the county. I didn't want to have Jerry feel that we're inviting one of his staffers without his being in the loop.
So is that a yes or a no?
Staffer, we don't have to respect that. Well,
you don't know how sensitive you can get.
So we could ask him
if he wants it.
Yeah, certainly. You've done the political thing by inviting Jerry. So I think Caden would be a good person to attend. And especially with Lee being there as well, I think there'd be some good discussions coming out of it. I don't know if you would be planning to have them present anything, but certainly to have them in the audience might be worthwhile.
Yes, and we've also talked about having the school board meeting is that same night, so we're not going to have everyone from the school district. But Elizabeth talked about having at least a written statement from the school superintendent about the importance of housing and its relationship to the school. So we may have a few things like that as well. Tina and I have also talked about having some graphics on the walls for people to look at and handouts. We could talk about that at the work session.
Okay. So I can't think of any other upcoming business. Can anyone else? I feel guilty for not being able to think of something else, right? But we'll take a light load too. So, okay. Then that's it. So I'll make a motion to close the meeting.
I'll second that, Colleen Thompson.
All in favor, Matt Cochran.
Diana Hughes. Tina Carlson.
John Verath, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Have a good evening. Appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Matt.